This podcast may contain content that is graphic and disturbing in nature. Listener discretion is advised.
It was an early morning and a school bus was picking up students, but they didn't know they were minutes away from disaster. This is Apple for the Teacher, a true crime podcast. I'm your host, Anna Thomas. Today's episode is called Wheels of the Bus. The school bus plunged into a river. What happened? Just a note before starting. Apple for the Teacher does not name perpetrators out of respect to the victims. The events in this story happened about 60 years ago in 1958. It was February in a small town called Prestonburg in Kentucky in the US. On the morning of the 28th, three separate events would come together to cause an incident which would devastate the local community. A school bus was on its usual school pickup run, collecting students in the surrounding communities and transporting them to the local elementary and high school. John Derisay was the driver. It was about 8 a.m. when the bus picked up eight students, including one girl named Joyce, her little sister and a friend named Iselle. The bus now had 49 students on board. The bus continued on, and then one of the students saw a pickup truck about 200 yards down the road, which seemed to be stuck in a ditch. At the same time as the bus was on its way to school, Banner Burkett was on his way to work at a coal company. He then realized that he had left his miner's cap at home and then looked to see if he still had his mining lamp or whether he had left that at home as well. So he reached across the seat with his right hand to look for the lamp. This movement to his right caused the steering wheel to also turn to the right, then causing the right front wheel of his half-ton truck to drop off the edge of the road. It came to a stop in a ditch with the axle caught in the mud, but luckily it wasn't in the way of traffic. So he decided to leave the truck there and walked back to his house, which was only about 500 yards away. He then borrowed his daughter's car and headed off to work. And it just happened that a tow truck was driving past and saw the pickup stranded. The driver, Donald Horn, stopped to offer assistance. Meanwhile, Joyce and her little sister sat down near the front of the bus, and Iselle sat near the back. Another girl named Janice was sitting with her feet against the top of a rear wheel well while reading a book. She then looked up from her book and saw the tow truck up ahead. Other boys in the back of the bus also saw the tow truck and noticed that their bus was approaching it rather fast. They expected the driver to slow down, but within an instant, the bus struck the back of the tow truck. A 17-year-old boy, Isaac, was sitting behind the driver and heard the driver scream out when the bus hit the truck's left rear bumper and fender. It then turned a hard left and struck a parked car, but striking the two vehicles did not stop the bus, and it then slid down an embankment and into the Big Sandy River. Following a period of heavy rain, the river was higher than usual, and one girl recalled, "I remember thinking, we're going to hit the trees any second, but there were no trees. The water was over the trees." Isaac recalled the following, "I was sitting directly behind the driver when we went into the water. Some little kid opened the emergency door and we began scrambling outside. The last thing I saw was the driver sitting behind the wheel. I don't think he got out. The driver fought the bus all the way down the bank, and he screamed out as the vehicle plunged into the swollen stream." The bus then bobbed on the top of the muddy river, half in and half out of the water. The driver had been knocked unconscious, and water gushed in through the broken windshield. The children screamed, trying to find a way out of the bus. 13-year-old William remembered blacking out briefly, but then came to and made his way to the rear emergency door, turning the handle and then kicking it open. He said, "I went in the water first. We were about 30 feet out, it seems like, and the boys started jumping out. It's lucky I was a good swimmer. I got a hold of Jerry Leslie first and pulled him to the riverbank and then just kept going back as long as they were screaming and hollering." A boy named Donald and his brother were about to jump into the river with another boy named Bucky. Donald said, "Bucky was with us back there, but he went back up front to get his sister and didn't come back. I remember him yelling her name, Katie." Children were huddled together in seats crying while others tried looking for their siblings. One boy escaped through an open window and pulled two other children out. Azelle managed to get to the emergency door where she saw a small boy who wouldn't jump into the water until his brother came. Azelle said, "I told him his brother was already out of the bus, so he jumped, but it wasn't true. His brother didn't get out. But I still don't know if that little kid hadn't jumped, whether I'd had had enough nerve to jump myself." She somehow managed to get to shore while seeing others flailing in the water. By this time, people who had witnessed the accident came to rescue the children, including the tow truck driver, Donald Horn. He recalled later how he had seen little kids hanging onto branches and some being swept away. One onlooker managed to find a long pole and waded out into the river with kids grabbing onto the pole. After Azelle reached the bank, she saw the bus almost completely submerged, with the arms and hands of the children sticking out of the windows. As William was making his way to the bank, he managed to grab a small girl by her hair, but the current was too strong and she was swept away. He still had a clump of her hair in his hand. Another boy called Jeff remembers standing on the bank and watching the bus as it slowly disappeared under the water. "I don't think I realized then that everybody didn't get off, but you looked around and there weren't that many people there." Although the accounts of the bus sinking vary, it's clear that it completely submerged within minutes. The river's normal depth was 4 feet, but due to the rain and melting snow, it went to 30 feet deep. So if the river had been at its normal level, the bus would not have sunk. The following news bulletin described the scene.
"Now here's a bulletin from the WKIC newsroom.
As it is right now, they're still dredging the river here in front of us. The bus hasn't been found. The bodies of the kids are still in the bus. We have a 2-mile vantage point here of the highway, and the river makes a bend around in front of us here. And of course, all of the working crews and the people are gathered mainly on the opposite side of the river. At this stage, the river is filled with boats of all types and fashion and have so far been unsuccessful in locating the bus. And Paul, the last that we heard was, I believe that they're building a barge, is that right?"
"That's right, they're building a barge. I think they have a truck bed, and they are fastening onto this truck bed a number of 55-gallon drums. And they intend to place this in the river there and send divers down to try and locate and hook onto the bus."
"Well, it's completely dark here now. We're still standing beside the muddy, swirling waters of the Big Sandy River, 3 miles south of Prestonsburg. It's 7 o'clock, and they have just notified us here that the rescue operation has been called off until daylight tomorrow morning. This is by far the most tragic event that has ever taken place here in this part of the country. Even entire families are lying at the bottom of this cold, muddy river here tonight. Paul, is there anything that you'd like to add before we return to our studios?"
"Might add, Ernest, that they call the parents over by the loudspeaker and ask them to line up those parents who have children in the school bus and ask them to vote whether they should continue working tonight. And the parents voted, I understand, to call it off until tomorrow."
They have the entire riverbank here for, I'd say, 1,000 feet each way from the rescue scene, completely dotted or completely lined with electric lights. The boats are all pulled to the side now, and the divers, I believe we mentioned earlier that they do have divers from Huntington, and all rescue operations have been called off. As I said earlier, as many as 3 or 4 kids out of one family has been reported missing and are still lying at the bottom of this cold, muddy river here tonight. Paul, do you have the name, or do you remember the name of the fellow that lives right back of us here that had, I believe, 3 kids in this bus?
Mr. J.B. Goble, I think, was his name. He had 2 boys and 1 daughter in that accident this morning.
We have talked with several people here tonight, and they all agree that this is by far the most tragic situation that has ever taken place here in eastern Kentucky. Of course, the flood that went through here did thousands of dollars of damage, but of course, homes and property that was destroyed can all be replaced. Tonight, there are families, kids, teenage boys, teenage girls lying at the bottom of this cold river, and of course, it is a scene that's actually so tragic that it's hard to describe. Paul, I'm going to turn it back now unless you have something final to say.
I might say that as yet, as far as we know, Ernest, they haven't located the bus yet. We've been here since noon, and they've searched and gone back and forth, and as far as we know, they still haven't located the bus.
That's right, and of course they have been hampered by the cold weather. The temperature has dropped down into the low 30s. The wind still is blowing. And of course, they've been hampered by the darkness now, and it has been called off. So now we return you to our main studios.
The search then resumed the next day, but by the end of that day, the bus still wasn't located. As one of the searchers said, "We just couldn't believe something as big as a school bus could be in the river, and we just couldn't find it." They had used grappling hooks, long steel rods, sonar equipment, and metal nets had been stretched across the river downstream in order to catch bodies. A river barge also had holes drilled through its deck, and steel pipes were pushed through the holes to drag the river. It was described as being like a huge comb. Boat teams were organized to probe and drag the bottom of the river, and a number of boats worked side by side so that the entire width of the river could be covered. A woven wire barrier was also placed under the bridge to catch the bodies. One of the rescuers recalled, "Every time you'd throw in the line, if the hook would catch on something, you'd start pulling a little slower. You just had a dread of what might be on the other end of the line." Then, after 53 hours of searching, the bus was finally located, which had been helped with the receding of the water level over that time. It had finally come to rest about 250 feet from where it had entered the river, and it may have taken longer to find had it not been for a rock ledge which had managed to stop it from moving further down the river. But it was how it was found which was just heartbreaking. A searcher saw what looked like a body just below the surface of the water. It was the body of a boy named James Ousley. He had been caught in one of the windows of the bus, and this is how the bus had finally been found. It was then that the delicate and complicated retrieval of the bus took place. Grappling hooks were attached, and bulldozers then dragged it out of the water onto the bank. One onlooker described the scene. "I remember the bus was loaded with mud, and you could see hands and legs sticking out of the mud. The people were just sort of in shock, and I remember a man ran over and pulled up that front door, and he grabbed the first body, and with that everybody came in and started doing it." The first body that they found was the driver. Then 14 more children were also pulled out. They had all been found together in the back of the bus, and it was a painstaking and traumatic process to get them all out of the mud. But there were still 12 missing. Over the next few days, more bodies were found in the river, leaving 7 children still to be found. With so much time now having passed, it was thought that the remaining bodies would be lodged somewhere in the river, and one suggestion was put forward to detonate dynamite, which could help to dislodge them. However, this idea was ultimately rejected due to the likely damage that could be inflicted to the children. More nets were then used in more locations further down the river, which resulted in 3 more bodies being found. The gradual descent of the river allowed more bodies to rise to the surface. Bulldozers also cleared tree branches along the river's edge, which were partly submerged, where more bodies could have been wedged, which resulted in a girl named Doris Burkett being found. The search continued on for 2 months, and another 2 more bodies were found, and finally the final child was found. She had been located 3 miles from the accident site, so it had taken 72 days to finally find all of the children. The final number of victims was 27, including the bus driver. The children were all aged between 8 and 17, and 21 children had somehow miraculously survived. You already heard some of the surviving children giving their harrowing accounts of their ordeal. William Heady, who had managed to kick open the emergency window, was hailed a hero. Here is the account that he gave. "I felt numb when the bus rolled over the hill, water up to my waist almost immediately from the time the bus first hit the water. I knew I must get out and fast. I pushed on the door handle, but it didn't move. I kicked it hard and it flew open. 'Come on, boys,' I yelled, 'let's get out of here.' I guess I was the first one to jump out into the water. It was so cold. I could hear others hitting the water behind me. I didn't look back. I swam as hard and as fast as I could. I got to the bank and some of the others were right behind me. I looked for Jerry, but I couldn't find him. I looked back out and grabbed him by his shirt. I pulled him over to a willow tree sticking out of the water. 'Hold on,' I told him. My strength was gone. I was numb and cold. I started back, but the swift water was rushing me downstream. Strands of long blonde hair caught my eye, but as I reached out grabbing for it, it slipped through my cold, numb fingers. I never saw it again. The strong current took her from me." So after an accident like this one, questions are inevitably asked about what caused the incident. Initial theories pointed to driver error or a medical condition, as well as mechanical failure. But the question of mechanical failure could never be answered because the bus's front wheels were pulled off while it was being raised from the river. It was also suggested that the tow truck driver may have backed his truck into the approaching bus, which he denied. But as one person said, people who suffer through an experience like that have to blame somebody. Sometimes accidents just happen. A police probe into the accident found that there were conflicting reports of what happened inside and outside the bus, which is totally understandable as it all happened so quickly. But crucial to what happened was the tow truck which the bus ran into. Varying accounts emerged, but here is what the tow truck driver himself stated. "I had stopped or was going so slow, I was almost stopped. Even eyewitnesses thought I'd stopped. Kids on the bus said so. I gave a hand signal and had a brake light. Eyewitnesses saw that. And the fact remains that the bus driver could have and should have went around me on the left side of the northbound lane. Witnesses on the bus testified the bus driver did not see my wrecker in time to avoid the collision." Now, it's interesting here to note that the tow truck driver took a lie detector test and failed. So make of that what you will. So with these doubts circling about what actually happened, it was this next account which became crucial. A man had been driving directly behind the school bus, and here is what he witnessed. On Friday, February the 28th, 1958, at about 8 a.m., I was travelling north on Highway 23 on my way to Paintsville, Kentucky. I was following a school bus, and in front of the bus travelling about the same speed was a wrecker. The bus was approximately 100 feet behind the wrecker. I noticed the wrecker's brake lights go on. I could see the brake lights because of a gradual curve in the road towards my left. As soon as I saw the brake lights, I put on my brakes, but noticed that the bus was not putting on its brakes, or at least the brake lights were not on. The wrecker kept its brake lights on and started to pull off the right side of the road. Aside from the brake lights on the bus not showing, I got the distinct impression that the bus was not reducing its speed at all. Then I noticed that the bus was gradually going towards the centre of the road. This was only a slight change of direction and certainly not enough to avoid hitting the wrecker. There was room, certainly, for the bus to go around the wrecker, and the wrecker driver had his brake lights on sufficiently long enough so that the bus driver should have seen that he was slowing down and pulling to the side of the road to stop. The bus, however, hit the wrecker, knocking it into a ditch on the side of the road, and the bus rolled off to the left and over the embankment into the river. Even after the impact of the bus and the wrecker, I still did not see the brake lights on the bus, and I actually looked for them because the bus driver certainly could have stopped the bus from going over the embankment, as it barely had enough momentum to go over. I pulled off the road on the left side and saw the bus. It looked to me like the bus was going to stop and not go into the river. There was a slight levelling of place near the edge of the river that seemed to have slowed the bus slightly. I figured that it was going to stop. Therefore, I cleared some of my equipment off my front seat so that I could take some of the injured to the hospital. But when I looked up again, the bus was in the water. At this time, I did not notice any other people on the scene. I started down the embankment when someone shouted to call an ambulance, and I returned to the road and asked where the nearest phone was. When I first applied my brakes, I automatically looked in the rearview mirror and I did not see anyone immediately behind me. The road was wet in places and there was no fog. Afterward, the wrecker driver asked me if I had seen the hand signal and I told him no. He may have given one, but I did not notice it. So the police probe concluded that the road conditions did not contribute to the accident. The road had been dry and the visibility was good. The report stated that the bus driver had three opportunities to stop the bus had he applied the brakes. These were 1. Before the bus hit the tow truck, after it hit the other parked car, and when the bus slowed down on a level place just before falling into the river. After the findings were presented, no criminal charges or lawsuits were filed. However, the bus driver's family challenged the findings and requested an inquiry, which was granted. The driver was ultimately cleared of any negligence. Now, I was able to tell this story from a wonderful book written about the accident called 1 Minute to Live. It was written by a lady named Jackie Branham Hall. At the age of 13, she changed schools and started attending the Prestonburg Elementary School. So telling the story of the accident became very personal to her. She had managed to interview many of those involved in the tragedy, and here is what people said about the bus driver. He was a well-respected young man from a fine family. He was honest and well-liked. Never heard anyone say a word against him. And here is her take on the accident. To this day, many still believe he had some sort of heart condition. Others believe something happened on the bus that distracted him, thus he did not see the tow truck in time to simply veer around it and avoid the crash entirely. Everyone has always been in complete agreement that driver John Desiree would never do anything that would have brought harm in any way to his young passengers. And I think this comment probably sums it all up. There are lots of things they thought happened, but no proof of it. I don't think anybody will ever know what really happened to tell the truth. The school board granted insurance payments to the families of the victims, and they agreed to share part of the money with the bus driver's family. The tow truck driver received an insurance payout for his damaged truck, which he donated to the victim's parents. And in stories like this one, there always seems to be cases of people who manage to avoid tragedy due to a pure twist of fate, and this story was no different. One boy had missed the bus by only a minute, and there were also three other siblings who usually took the bus, but on that day, their father drove them to school as it was his day off. And then there was Joyce, the girl mentioned at the beginning of the story. She hadn't been feeling well and planned to stay home from school that day, but her friend, Martha Burkett, had stopped by her house on the way to school and reminded her that they had an important test that day. So Joyce agreed to go, but she didn't survive. However, her friend Martha did survive. And just imagine the funerals of the children. How hard would it have been for the surviving children to attend the funerals? In fact, some of them couldn't. As Ezell said, "I felt guilty. I kept thinking what their parents would think, looking at me." After the tragedy, school had been suspended, and when it resumed, many of the children could not get on a school bus again. Ezell went to school by taxi until one day she finally got the courage to get on a bus. She said, "It was awful. I remember grabbing the handle of the door, being stiff as a poker, and getting sick after I got to school." I would thoroughly recommend the book 1 Minute to Live. It's not really text heavy, but rather it's a pictorial history of the accident with information about each of the photos. And I really cannot believe how many photos had been taken back in 1958. Clearly, someone at the time saw the need and importance of documenting the tragedy. And so it's only thanks to people like these that we know about such events, even now, some 60 years later. And to finish, I will leave you with a song that was written about the accident, "No School Bus in Heaven."
On Route 23, down in eastern Kentucky, a school bus wrecked there in the county of Floyd. It left many parents a weeping and mourning. It took away the lives of their little girls and boys. These little school children have gone on to glory. No lesson to study, no worries or cares. They're now rejoicing and walking with Jesus. God, please watch over these heartbroken families. Give them the courage to go on alone. Show them the right way that leads up to heaven, where once more we'll all be at home. These little school children have gone on to glory. No lessons to study.
just cool.